Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Last week, two oil tankers were damaged in the Gulf of Oman. It's suspected this was an act of sabotage. Tension has been high in the Gulf as the U.S. has been putting pressure on Iran to discuss the 2015 nuclear deal further. Tim Shorn is Director of International Studies and Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of South Dakota, and he's joining us from inside SDPB's Vermilion Studios with the latest. Dr. Shorn, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be back.
We often call on you to help us put some of these Middle Eastern situations in context, not only for South Dakotans, but to help make sense of the news. So where's the best place to begin? Because we have several entry points. Where do you want to start this conversation today?
Well, I think it's important to realize that what is happening in Iran and in the Persian Arabian Gulf area is really the convergence of two and a half or three different conflicts. We have the conflict between the United States and Iran that began in 1979. We have the international conflict, if you will, between Iran and the rest of the world as it applies to its nuclear programs. And then we have a conflict that is probably the most likely to lead to war, and that is the Cold War between Saudi Arabia and Iran that is playing itself out in a number of arenas.
So that's the intersection of the civil war in Yemen then?
Well, yes. When we look at the Cold War between Iran and Saudi Arabia, this is one that it played itself out in Syria. It's playing itself out in Yemen. We have seen it to a lesser extent in places like Iraq and Lebanon, that you have a level of animosity that has increased over the last couple of years between the very Sunni kind of Wahhabist Saudis, Arab Saudis, and on the other side, the Shia, primarily Persian Iranians on the other side, both kind of figuratively and literally as we look at the Gulf. And this is a conflict that has been ratcheted up probably a little more by the Saudis than the Iranians, but the Saudis know that they can afford to ratchet it up with the United States in their corner.
What is the U.S. presence in the region right now? Just how many troops do we really have there and why?
Well, and the number of troops, I'm hesitant to venture a number.
And I guess I'm asking that because of the call to increase the number of troops. Yeah, it's going up.
And the question becomes, what are our goals there? What are our concerns? What are our interests? And what kind of troop presence do we need to meet all of those concerns and goals? Right now, we have troops there still because of what occurred in Iraq with our invasion in 2003, with the continuing likely strife between Sunnis and Shias in Iraq. We have troops because of ISIS. We have troops present, very many fewer now in Syria, but we also have troops elsewhere in the Gulf to monitor what Iran is up to ensure that ISIS does not rebuild a territorial component to their power in Iraq or Syria. So we have troops there for a number of reasons, but the question becomes, do our troop levels allow us to truly meet the goals that we may or may not have been setting for ourselves in eliminating ISIS, in containing Iran, in preventing a renewal of conflict in Iraq? And I would say that we probably do not have enough troops to meet all of those goals. But at the same time, there's not a lot of interest in the United States to return troop levels to what they once were or anywhere near those levels.
It seems like President Donald Trump had said it's time to bring those troops home. And now he's also calling, you know, to send some more to the region. How has his presidency sort of changed the conversation? Certainly the nuclear deal.
Right. And that's an interesting question at a couple of levels. One is the Middle East is probably an area that is most adept at ruining campaign promises. that oftentimes presidents are elected or come into office with the expectation that their Middle Eastern policy is going to be different. And it's and oftentimes in their mind, they believe that that difference is going to lead to more success. And reality hits them probably a few minutes after inauguration that oftentimes the truth is much more convoluted than what their campaign promises were. President Trump had certainly hoped, I think, to bring the troops back home, but then realized very quickly that you don't defeat ISIS by not having boots on the ground, that you do not keep peace in Iraq without boots on the ground, that you do not contain Iran without a real military presence. And that's going to require a change in the approach, and that's going to probably mean more American forces in the Middle East. And then at another level, with the Trump presidency, the Trump administration withdrawing from the Iran nuclear deal, it certainly changes the nature of the discussion, and I put that in quotes, between the United States and Iran, and probably our ability to influence Iran's decisions in other arenas, which then could very well result in the need for more troops.
So Iran is seeking to stockpile uranium at this point. Where does the rest of the world come in? And when you mentioned this other conflict of, you know, sort of Iran versus the rest of the world, and regarding its nuclear program, it's not just the United States going solo here.
Correct. And I think it's important for us to remember that when the negotiations with Iran were held regarding its nuclear program, that it was the P5 plus one on one side and Iran on the other. So you had the five permanent members of the Security Council, the U.S., the United Kingdom, Russia, China, France, and then also adding Germany in, because Germany is an important player in obviously Europe, but also economically an important player in the Middle East. And so we had an array of forces lined up against Iran, which probably helped to convince Iran to sign on to the original agreement. Now, the original agreement, as far as nuclear nonproliferation and arms control goes, was, in the minds of many disarmament experts, an ideal agreement, that it met almost all of their concerns, if not all of their concerns. And Iran was complying, and in some cases was ahead of schedule. But the Trump administration was more concerned about aspects that were not in the agreement and wanted Iran to meet the required behavioral expectations of the Trump administration as it came to developing ballistic missile technology, the role of the Revolutionary Guard in various parts of the Middle East, Iran's funding of Shia movements in various parts of the Middle East. So the United States, when we scrape away all of the rhetoric, really wasn't upset about how Iran was working vis-a-vis the original nuclear program. The United States was upset about Iran's behavior in other areas, that we were upset that Iran wasn't doing things that weren't in the original agreement to start with. And so I think we backed ourselves into a corner, that we are now not part of the nuclear deal. The other signatories are. They believe that the United States acted precipitously by withdrawing from the deal. And now we're in the rather ironic position of trying to get Iran to abide by a nuclear program deal that we have withdrawn from. So some would call it irony. Some would call it hypocrisy. And so we've backed ourselves into a corner where the rest of the world believes that the agreement was accomplishing what it needed to do, that the United States had become party to it. A change of administration means a change of tactics. And now we're looking at the potential of the U.S., the Saudis, and Iran ratcheting up a war of words to the point where it could be a war of bullets.
The attack on the oil tankers, or the damage to the oil tankers, we don't have all the answers for what happened there. But how does it play into this this whole conflict and these ongoing conversations? Is it significant to the raising of tensions?
It has the potential to be very significant. If we go back to the Iran-Iraq war of the 1980s, Iraq began targeting Iranian tankers. And when Iran responded, the United States and our allies rallied around Iraq, the original wrongdoer. And we saw then a number of tankers reflagged as American ships, which then enabled the United States Navy to insert itself as protectors by order of the American president at that point, Ronald Reagan. And so we see the possibility of attacks on tankers really changing the dynamics. And when we look at a map, the Persian or Arabian Gulf might look, you know, good size, but once you start filling it with oil tankers, other cargo ships, and vessels from, you know, 1 to 2 dozen navies, the likelihood of either an intentional escalation or an accidental escalation really becomes more likely. And sometimes we're not always good at waiting for the answers, or we kind of create the answers that fit our plans, or we simply move forward on the unknown. And that's possibly what's going to happen here, is that it's going to get ratcheted up without necessarily having all the answers.
Mm-hmm. So from a South Dakota perspective, you know, people tend to key in on, you know, oil prices, for example, or the price of gas. This is, the impacts of this are wide-reaching. How do you see people in South Dakota paying attention to what's happening now? Why does it matter here?
Well, and everyone knows that there's a significant amount of oil that comes out of the Persian Arabian Gulf through the Straits of Hormuz, and if that becomes a battleground, it can certainly lock up a significant amount of the world's oil supply. While the United States does not necessarily depend on oil from that region as much as we did 10 or 20 years ago, the rest of the world does. And as oil prices go up, we can see the possibility of more American-produced oil being sold on the market, which means then that prices for Americans will go up because some of that domestic production is being sold for a larger profit elsewhere. So we do have to consider the fact that oil prices might go up. Now, we put that together with some of the trade difficulties that we are having, and we can see an increase not only in gas prices, but also in other consumer goods because of increased transportation costs, because of added tariffs and duties to some of the products. And so economically, this is something that can come to affect Americans, and it can hit hard and fast. Oil prices oftentimes react to disturbances globally, whether politically or economically. They sometimes go up in expectation that there are going to be problems with the global supply. And it's something that on occasion can happen overnight at the gas pump, while other prices on consumer goods will go up more slowly. But if this escalates, it's very likely that the Americans are going to feel this in their pocketbooks, especially during summer vacation times, getting ready to go back to school. So this is an issue that will have economic ramifications, most likely.
And not to mention South Dakotans who might be serving in the region as well. There's a lot going on. It was listening to NPR this morning, and they said that, you know, someone, a guest was on, they said, you know, U.S. doesn't want a war with Iran. Iran doesn't want a war with the U.S. But sometimes things get carried away.
That's correct. I mean, and sometimes wars don't happen because countries have intentionally set down the path to go to war, that it's a miscalculation, that another actor inserts itself and upsets the balance even more. In that case, I would look at Saudi Arabia. One of the things that we need to understand about Iran's government is that it's a bit bifurcated, that we do have moderates in Iran. At the same time, you have those who are much more hardline and revolutionary. And there's a real potential that one part of the Iranian government engages in activities, for example, the Revolutionary Guard, that other parts of the government are opposed to. And so the question becomes, how do you influence and assist the moderates while containing the more radical or extremist elements of the Iranian polity? And I would argue that the path that we are taking will actually strengthen the more extremist elements of the Iranian government and sideline the moderates. Mm-hmm. And that increases the likelihood of war as well. Also, by going after Iran so strongly, especially rhetorically and the thought of sending in more troops, that emboldens Saudi Arabia to allow their forces to take action to protect Saudi's interest, but then it also backs the United States into a corner. So yes, this is something that can escalate quickly and accidentally.
Hmm. Tim Shorns with the University of South Dakota. He's the Director of International Studies and Associate Professor of Political Science at USD. He joined us from the SDPB studios in Vermilion. Dr. Shorn, thank you so much once again for putting this all in perspective for us here at home.
Thank you for having me.